Myrna Stone is in the studio with me tonight as we honor National Poetry Month, which she's certainly qualified to do. She's the author of 5 books of poetry, including 2 that were finalists for the Ohio Anna Book Award in Poetry. She's received 2 Ohio Arts Council grants and has been named Poet of the Year previously. She's also a founding member of the Greenville Poets. She lives in Greenville, Ohio, and her latest book of poetry is titled Luz Bones. And we're going to have some fun with that name because Luz is spelled L-U-Z. And I'm happy to welcome you and talk about that as well as your poems. Myrna, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for asking me.
So let's talk about the title of your book.
Okay.
And what it means, first of all, of course, and why you chose it.
I chose it because I found after I'd written about maybe 15 poems that became eventually this manuscript of more poems, that I was talking about 2 things in the book, in the poems, because I often do this. I write to a theme because then I don't have to say, what am I going to write about next? What's going to happen? Because that's hard. I hate the tyranny of the blank page. But what I discovered was that I was talking about mortality. I'm 75, so mortality and immortality. And how can we achieve the immortality part of it? The title came about because I read something about a Jewish tale of a place called Luz, a city in which people lived forever. They became immortal. Of course, nobody knows if that's the case, obviously, but that was the idea. And when I found that, I thought, okay. And that became that poem that I wrote called Luz Bones. It became the title poem of the book. And it's the prologue. It's the beginning of everything, in a sense. We're born. We're all looking to live. We live, and then we die. But some of us reach a kind of immortality, at least in this life, because we're famous or because we've done something extraordinary or something awful. The other thing about it is I found myself being attracted to subjects, historical people, over a range of 5 centuries. And the book runs chronologically because I'm inhabiting. These are all dramatic monologues, except for the first poem and the last poem. Those are in my voice, and I'm talking about my parents in the last poem and my father and myself in the first poem, which is the title poem, Luz Bones. The rest of the poems are dramatic monologues in which I am speaking very specifically from these people's lives and talking about their lives, the important part. And I have to say, I did enormous amounts of research and found that everything I'm talking about, I chose moments that were real. And then beyond that, as a poet, I said, how would a human react to that? How would I react to that if it's a woman? How would I react to that if I'm speaking from a man's life? So it was an incredible journey. I learned so much, and it was very exciting to do. Of the books I've done, it's probably the one that I've been the most invested in, except for the book I read about my father in the last years of his life.
I would think the research was voluminous.
It was. And I take those points to me that mattered in their lives, and I talk from them and about those things. Those are the stepping off point for every single poem. The middle section is about the original Siamese twins, Chan and Eng Bunker. And that became the centerpiece of the book because I'm also attracted to people who are outside the norm, who feel like an other somehow. That attracts me because I grew up in a very small town, and I hate to use a stereotypical idea that being a little girl in a small town and finding out that I wanted to be a poet when I was 12 years old, that stereotypical idea of poets being other, you know, alcoholics or having very, very sensitive psyches, I felt different, and I'm attracted to that when I write.
So let's hear the first poem, which is the title poem.
Luz Bones, that's a title, obviously, and then underneath that there's an epigraph, and it reads, those bones comprising the coccyx or tailbone, which according to legend are the last to decay in the grave, thereby seeming immortal. Inside my father's, in life, Staphylococcus once colonized itself after its descent from his heart. Each rude metropolis inhabiting a segment where pain, nascent, then perverse, afflicted him for months. And in my own, during both labors, grew a torment that remembered stuns me still. A Jewish tale says of the sabers of death, neither rattle nor slay, in the city of Luz, all that God saved a paradise here, where dwellers live in eternity, unbound from the onus of sin. No device is given the rest of us but to envision the body's smallish afterlife, a core of bones, five or less, brown or ashen, ordered or erratic, within an earthen door.
Thank you. I was really interested to hear about your process in terms of how you came to write the book, you know, how these poems all came together, because it's a fascinating organization of writing in itself. There are four parts, including the epilogue. And I'm curious now about how you chose the various subjects.
It's very simple. One word that drives me: obsession. Honestly, I mean, I had the whole choice of over five centuries of human beings that I could have chosen. And once again, it goes back to that idea, who's on the outside and how difficult it is to achieve something. Sometimes the differentness, the otherness of people makes them impossible for history to forget. And sometimes the otherness excludes them from being remembered. For instance, with the Bunkers, with Chang and Eng Bunkers, the Siamese twins, they grew up in Siam. They were discovered by a sea captain who saw them swimming in a river, and they were so unusual, the king of Siam almost had them murdered because they were considered a monster, the two of them hooked together or actually held together by this bit of ligament between their chests. Their story was remarkable because there were so many elements. How did they ever arrive as these men who were incredibly educated, spoke eight languages, ended up in North Carolina, and had a plantation? They now, I think, have an extraordinary number of descendants, many of whom are famous, one of whom I think is a state senator or in politics, certainly. So why did I choose them? Right. Because they were about as other as one could find. It was that way throughout. Even people that you might know, like Martin Luther, Mae West, I had to know as much as I could about them, so I learned much more than actually entered into the poems that I could write about. But knowing them so well, I could then almost decide how they might react in the most human of ways in certain situations. So it was as much a journey for me as it was for them.
I would think so. And speaking of Chang and Eng, they were married. There are poems written from their wives' point of view. And I'm going to ask you to read one now, which is titled Addie Bunker on Her Sister and Their Conjoined and Separate Lives.
Mount Airy, North Carolina, 14 March, 1892. We both began to fatten in our middle years, no chores or cares or forced subsistence lessening our girth. Now, though often idle, Sally wastes away, her body and countenance ever more skeletal. Yes, we skirmished, we surely did, for access to our husbands and attention for our children, for land, chattels, goods. But if our wounds were wounds of want, they were also those of necessity, for which neither of us need speak with regret. Once we were the fairest belles in Surrey County, raised up to marry the finest of gents. Yet it was I who played the cleverest game by securing us each both love and fame.
She got the last laugh, didn't she?
She certainly did.
Our time grows short, but I want you to just say a couple of things about Greenville Poets, because the group's been around for a long time. And how does that support your writing?
I can honestly say, if it hadn't been for the Greenville Poets, of which I was a founding member along with two other people, I would not have a single book, much less five, to my name. Because writing is really, really hard. And it's really hard sometimes to focus, to come back from your normal life and get into your head and take that energy and that time and put it into it. It's absolutely essential, but it's really hard to do, especially when you have the tyranny of the blank page facing you. So because we meet once a month and we critique one another's work, and they're remarkable people. The weird thing is we've been together 35 years. All of us have achieved a level of a kind of prosperous level in the art of writing poetry that I don't think we all expected that when we started. We're not necessarily friends on the outside of the group. I mean, we don't see each other every week for coffee, but every month we get together and we invest in one another without fail.
Well, I want to thank you for talking with us tonight. Oh. This is an engaging and inventive journey through other people's lives, from Martin Luther to Mae West, as you said. So thanks for your poetry. Thanks.
Thank you so much. It's been a really wonderful thing to come and do this. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
I've been talking with Myrna Stone about her latest book of poetry. It is titled Love's Bones, published by Etruscan Press. You'll find more information about it at wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. I'm Barbara Gray.